Welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Jake Neer, in for Stephen Henderson today, who's taking some much-deserved time off. A little later in the program, we'll be talking about the state of organized labor here in Michigan and across the country. Workers arguably have more power at this moment than just about any other time I can think of in my lifetime amid increasing demand for labor. And with that, we're seeing efforts locally and nationally to unionize. I'll talk with a local organizer trying to organize workers at a Starbucks shop in Ann Arbor. But first, I want to welcome someone else who has spent a lot of time in his life working in the world of organized labor and continues that work in Congress today. Congressman Andy Levin, a Democrat from Bloomfield Township representing Michigan's 9th District. He is running for re-election, as you might know, in Michigan's new 11th Congressional District. That puts him against fellow incumbent Democrat Congresswoman Haley Stevens, who will join me here on the show tomorrow at the same time. You don't want to miss that. But Congressman Levin joins me now to talk about this bid for another term in Congress and more. Congressman Levin, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Hey, Jake, it's great to be with you. And I have to say, I was just at a Starbucks in Clinton Township recently where the workers are unionizing, and it was amazing to meet with them. And their energy was infectious, and I think this really is an incredible moment.
Yeah, and I want to talk a lot about organized labor and unionization efforts in just a little bit. I do want to start off, though, by talking about your reelection bid. First of all, I want to ask about these new district lines. You're losing a sizable chunk of your district, especially in the eastern portion of your current district in Macomb County. I'm curious what you make of the way that the Redistricting Commission drew these lines.
Well, you know, Jake, we members of Congress don't get to draw the lines, right? We just go before the people and seek their votes. And we all, Michiganders, chose to create this new citizen commission in the voters not politician referendum in 2018, right? So they drew these lines. They didn't pick my favorite map. You know, they had a different map that would have kept my Southeast Oakland and Southern Macomb areas that I represent intact much more than this. But they chose what they chose, and the new 11th is where I live. It's where Mary and I have lived for 16 years here in Bloomfield Township. It's where I grew up in Berkeley. It's where even my great-grandparents immigrated to this country and started out in the little country town of Birmingham, Michigan. They were the first Jewish family there in the 1890s. So, you know, the way they drew the maps, they totally separated out everything I currently represent in Oakland from the parts I represent in Macomb. So I feel like, you know, I'm going to run where I live, and I'm very excited about the new 11th district. And I'm sure we'll have a great candidate in the 11th. And there's a lot of, in the 10th. And there's a lot of interesting opportunities, like over in the new 3rd district, where I think Hillary Scolton has a great chance to win in the new 3rd, which voted for Joe Biden by 8 points. So it's interesting. It's a lot of change.
I know that this question has become more and more politically charged in recent weeks, but I'm asking this in a really honest way, because this was genuinely my first reaction when I saw the congressional map. I thought that, there might be a chance that you would decide to run in the new 10th congressional district, which is centered in southern Macomb County. Again, that part of the district that you're losing. Democrats don't have an incumbent there right now, or even sort of a well-known candidate, anyone that really comes to mind as a really clear front runner for that. I know that there are some political watchers who think that you could have held that swing district for Democrats. It's pretty 50-50 there in that new district. Did you give any serious consideration to running in the 10th?
Well, we looked at all of it very carefully, Jake. And, you know, the new 10th, we're going to try to field a great candidate there and do well. It adds a lot of areas north of Hall Road that I didn't represent before, and areas over like all of Harrison Township over on the lake. It adds Utica, some Macomb Township, all of Shelby Township, the northern third of Sterling Heights. So it's a rather different district than the one I currently represent. And it's now, I think, a 90% Macomb district. So rather than the kind of one third, two thirds that I represent now. So it just, this is what really seems like it makes the most sense. And there are a lot of people. I think I've talked to every person who's thinking about running in the new 10th. And, we're going to find a great candidate and I'll support them fully.
You know, Congresswoman Stevens said this to Fox 2 last month. She said, quote, "I couldn't imagine abandoning over 70% of my current constituents in an open and winnable congressional seat to primary a fellow Democrat." She was referring to you and your decision to run in the new 11th district. I want to know what is your reaction to that statement?
I just think that it's up to the voters to pick the elected officials and not the other way around. Nobody is owed a seat in Congress. Nobody deserves anything. You know, we work hard. We need to work hard and earn the trust of the voters. And I'm running on my record of accomplishment in Congress. I mean, just in the 2 weeks before we left in this current district work period, I passed a major amendment to the America Competes Act to allow unemployed workers and students to use Pell Grants for short-term training that they need to get jobs employers want to fill right now. And I introduced my Protect Children Through Safe Gun Ownership Act with the support of all the major gun groups and the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers. And I introduced the resolution to allow our employees in the House to unionize. I mean, so I think that I'm just running on really my being a really serious, effective, progressive member of Congress. And it's up to the voters to pick. And this, you know, Jake, you're a junkie of politics in Michigan.
Yeah,
every 10 years, unfortunately, we've lost at least one seat. And we've had really every 10 years one of these situations. And I never thought I'd be in one. But, you know, you had Gary Peters and Hanson Clark. You had John Dingell and Lynn Rivers. You had Dale Kildee and Jim Barsha, right? I mean, that's some examples of these primaries that have happened when districts were mashed about. And it's really uncomfortable, but I'm very excited to be running in the new 11th, and it just feels like the right thing.
Should also mention too, I mean, you have a family in the 11th, you live in the 11th, that from just a human perspective too, I mean, it's no small thing to think about, you know, picking up your entire family where you have teenage kids and move them somewhere else where they haven't grown up.
I have a daughter in high school and I'm, you know, want to help her finish her high school. And if they had done the maps the other way, I would have been able to, you know, continue to have her be in the same high school. But even if I had to move, so it's personal and it's a question of, what's a great fit? Where do you belong? My kids are the fifth generation of my family to live in the new 11th district. I represent so many communities in the new 11th district. You know, Hazel Park, Madison Heights, Ferndale, Pleasant Ridge, Huntington Woods, Berkeley, Royal Oak, part of Clawson, all across to Bloomfield Township where I live. So, I'm excited about the new district and I'm super excited about the new areas that I haven't represented. But, you know, throughout my life, Jake, I've done so much. So, for example, I organized a nursing home in Farmington Hills in 1984 to help the workers there join SEIU. And I helped many communities in the new district join my Lean and Green Michigan program when I created that in the years before I joined Congress. And so many workers throughout this area benefited from No Worker Left Behind. In fact, I worked with Oakland County Michigan Works when Chrysler was going through its bankruptcy, and we set up a whole special program for Chrysler workers who were separating from Chrysler because of that bankruptcy to help them get new training and new opportunities. So, you know, I've been working in this new 11th district really throughout my whole lifetime, and I'm just very excited about representing it.
You're listening to 101.9 WDET. This is Detroit Today. I'm Jake Neer in for Stephen Henderson. Today, I'm talking with Congressman Andy Levin, a Democrat from Bloomfield Township representing Michigan's 9th District, running for re-election in Michigan's new 11th Congressional District. We're talking about that race, and in a little bit, we will talk about unionization in Michigan across the country in 2022 and whether there is momentum picking up for the idea of organized labor, especially among a new generation of workers. And if you have things that you want to contribute to the conversation, we would love to hear from you today. What questions do you have for Congressman Andy Levin about this bid for re-election in the new 11th Congressional District? What do you think? What do you make of this primary between him and fellow Democratic incumbent Haley Stevens, who's going to be joining the show tomorrow here on 101.9 WDET? And what do you think of these new district lines? Do you think that the Redistricting Commission did a good job with these? Do you think they kept the right communities together, both in Congress and here in the state legislature here in Michigan? Call us up, 313-577-1019. Again, that's 313-577-1019. You can also use the hashtag Detroit Today on Twitter, and we'll try to work those into the conversations as well. Again, the number is 313-577-1019. And Congressman Levin, you did talk a little bit about what you're running on here. I do want to ask you, can you offer a specific example or more than one specific example of where you see you and Congresswoman Stevens significantly disagreeing on a policy issue? Is there a significant policy difference in sort of where the two of you stand when voters make that choice at the ballot box?
There are a lot of differences. I mean, we're both good Democrats, but I'm an original co-sponsor of Medicare for All, and I believe healthcare is a human right for everybody. She has not supported that. I am an original co-sponsor of the Green New Deal, and she has not supported that. Not only that, I'm one of several members of not very many who supported all the Green New Deal bills. And I've authored multiple pieces of serious climate change legislation. We've talked about my EV Freedom Act, and I'm really proud that the President Biden included significant amount of funding, $7.5 billion, to get EV charging infrastructure off the ground, which is what that bill is about. But I also authored the Build Green Act and the Buy Green Act with Senator Warren, and the American Energy Workers Opportunity Act with Senator Sherrod Brown. So I just think there's a record of accomplishment and seriousness on that, that's very significant. And then it's not really so much about voting record, is about my work in Congress to support workers' freedom to form unions. My leadership on the PRO Act, being chosen by Speaker Pelosi to give the weekly address when we passed that bill, being asked by Chairman Bobby Scott to refute all the Republican amendments seeking to weaken it and to give the big floor speech on it. And really my advocacy for workers almost every month in my life in Congress, supporting workers who are organizing, bargaining, on strike, whether it was a GM workers with UAW or UAW workers at Harvard University, the graduate employees. I got all the Harvard alumni in Congress to send a letter to President Larry Bacow of Harvard. And I had talked to him on the phone multiple times until they got recognition. I led a delegation to Bessemer, Alabama, when the Amazon workers were on strike. So that's another big difference. And, I've passed significant legislation on environmental matters. Both the previous president and President Biden have signed my legislation to clean up PFAS and prevent harmful incineration of it. So I think there are differences of accomplishment and of emphasis. And I think, I'm just a clear progressive who's going to do what I think is right, and regardless of the consequences. I've spoken up for human rights around the world, and I'm going to continue to do that.
Let's go to the phones. I want to hear from Semi in Detroit. Semi, you're on Detroit Today. What do you have to say? Hello? Semi?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. What would you like to say today?
I wanted to say good morning and thank you very much for the opportunity. I wanted to suggest that we don't jump to conclusions about the redistrict mapping committee. Give them some time. And looks like they are doing their best, at least for now. And it's going to be reshaping the whole political map for the state of Michigan in reference to the people's decision back in days. So let them give them the time and do not jump to conclusions. And for Congressman DeLevin, I'm one of your constituents. I am Sami Al-Hadi, and I'm very proud of the work you are doing. And I believe that you did a good service for the whole state of Michigan in the previous term. And I wish you a good luck for the new term. And I'm happy to see you again in the second meeting today.
All right. Yeah. Sami, I really appreciate that. Really appreciate you calling in. I will say that the redistricting maps, if I'm hearing you right there, Sami, that the redistricting maps are finalized now. What we are waiting for is these legal challenges to make their way through the process. So far, nothing has stuck in at least one major case has been thrown out. But I think it is, you know, as soon as those maps were finalized, I think it was pretty quick. We saw sort of the dominoes fall from there about who was running where. But thank you very much for that. I appreciate that, Sami.
Well, Jake, let me say, I do think Sami may have a point in that. I think it's going to be hard for us to evaluate the work the commission has done until the election's over.
Right. Know? That is
so
true.
In that way, I think the way history will judge the work of this commission will be, you know, after we go through this first time around. And so we'll have a lot of interesting talk then about, you know, what the new maps really meant for in the state House, state Senate, and Congress, right?
So that is true. Yeah, no, we've seen many think pieces about what this could mean for political representation in Michigan. All very interesting work being done by the people who've been following this closely and following Michigan politics. But you're right. We really will not have a sense of what it really means in terms of who gets elected, especially in a midterm election. It's kind of a wild card, I would say, this year. I want to take Jim in Charleston, South Carolina. Jim, good to hear from you in Charleston. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning, Congressman. I understand you're not the governor of Michigan, but, you know, are you satisfied with the decline in population? I grew up in Detroit. After graduate school, I moved to Washington, D.C., and then South Carolina. Year after year, I just see more industry, more jobs, more people, more tangential industries moving to the Southeast. And I see, you know, in my beloved Rust Belt, a continued decline. What are you satisfied with the transfer of population from the Midwest to the Southeast? What would you do to change it? What do you think about it? So I look forward and appreciate your comments.
Yeah, Jim, thank you for that. Congressman Levin.
Yeah, well, thanks, Jake. You know, Jim, I think that for one thing, Michigan, just to be clear, we actually grew super slightly, but we're, you know, compared to the other states, we're not growing nearly as fast as states in the Southeast and South Southwest. And so some of them have picked up seats. States like Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York, Ohio, you know, have been losing our share of the population. I think a lot of it is because we've allowed our country to be industrialized. I'm a fierce opponent of the trade policy that we've had over Democratic as well as Republican presidents that have allowed companies to offshore our jobs, to shutter factories here. We've lost so much of our manufacturing base. It's not inevitable. It's not like a natural phenomenon of globalization or technology change, because Germany, which has higher labor costs than the United States and higher levels of unionization, gets about twice as much of its GDP for manufacturing as the US does. So don't tell me it's not possible. The other thing I'd say, Jim, is I think we have a real chance to reverse this trend, not only by, with President Biden's leadership and others, bringing manufacturing back to this country, like we just did in the America Competes Act, to bring microchip production and much else back here. We saw during the pandemic, we for our security, we need to make medicines and supplies here and so forth. But also, I'm afraid to say that climate change is the accelerating effects of it will continue to make a place like Michigan look more and more attractive. to people where, because our weather is more moderate and we have a lot of access to fresh water, and it's just a great place to be, you know, in that sense as well.
All right. Coming up on Detroit Today, we're going to continue this conversation with Congressman Andy Levin, and we'll talk about new organized labor efforts, including his bill to allow congressional staff members to unionize. We're also going to keep going on the phones here. Give us a call if you have something to add, 313-577-1019. And we'll get to you next, Mark in Redford Township, Anthony in Southwest Detroit.
WDET is your place for open dialogue.
The music you love.
Real news and in-depth analysis.
And cultural experiences. The sound of Detroit.
101.9 WDET is your public radio station.
Listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Jake Neer, in for Stephen Henderson today. I'm talking with Congressman Andy Levin, a Democrat from Bloomfield Township, representing Michigan's 9th District. Currently, he is now running for re-election in Michigan's new 11th Congressional District, and he is going head-to-head with a fellow incumbent Democrat, Haley Stevens, who is going to be joining us on the show tomorrow talking about the same subject. So you want to come back and listen to that again, same time, same place tomorrow. Congressman Levin, you know, I wanted to really quick, before we get into unions in labor, I did really quickly want to ask you about a bill that you recently introduced in Congress. Your safe storage firearms legislation that was a response to the Oxford school shooting. Tell us what that would do, and do you expect a vote in the House on that legislation?
Yes, it's the Protect Children Through Safe Gun Ownership Act, and I'm really excited about this bill. I mean, it's just, I cannot stand while we have a mass shooting like we had at Oxford High School, but the drip of gun violence every single day in this country and the way it affects kids. But after Oxford, there was one focal point: parental responsibility. So I authored this bill to do three things. It's very straightforward, and the provisions of it are popular with Democrats, independents, Republicans, everybody. First, it places a limit on transfer and use of handguns in particular, because there's special rules about handguns, places the limits on transferring handguns to minors or their use of them. Basically, it requires parents or guardians to say that they will actually supervise a juvenile or have another appropriate adult supervise them while they have a handgun before they can transfer it to them. Believe it or not, that's not at all required right now. It's not about hunting rifles or, you know, it's about handguns. Second, it includes a secure gun storage requirement and allows victims or their family to sue if there's a death or physical harm resulting from a firearm not being properly stored. We do not have a national safe storage law, so that's a key part. And third, it creates a grant program through the Department of Education so eligible school districts can offer parents best practices and education about keeping guns away from kids and guidance on how to teach age-appropriate gun safety. So that's the bill. You know, I'm a father of four, Jake, and these school shootings get a lot of attention, and they're so horrifying, and the trauma from them will go on for years in the families, in the students who witnessed it or lost friends. But that's a tiny fraction of the problem. Accidents in homes among kids who get access to guns. Gun violence on streets among kids, you know, minors who got access to a gun in a house. And above all, youth suicides, which is the majority of all of these deaths from guns that kids get their hands on. So it's really a simple bill, and I'm really pushing it forward. I can't tell you when it might have a vote, but we're in really serious discussions about putting together some of the measures that we've authored to move forward. And of course, we've already passed two pieces of sensible gun reform through the House, and the Senate is sitting on them. So we got to get rid of the filibuster to move any of this through the Senate.
And do you sense, though, that there is any real urgency on the part of leadership right now to move bills like this right now, especially after what we saw in Oxford?
I do. I think our leadership in the House is very, very committed to the moving sensible gun reform. It's true in the Senate as well. And, you know, these it's really not about the American people or whether the American people support these things. Things like safe gun storage, or, you know, we already passed universal background checks in the House. These things are supported by, you know, 80, 90% of the American people, including people of all parties and no party. It's just that there's one political party that's captured by the gun lobby, and they can filibuster things and prevent them from moving forward. So we're going to keep pushing in the House, and we'll keep pushing on the Senate to do a lot more business than they currently do, because they're stuck with requiring a supermajority to pass just about anything, which is something the founding fathers did not want to see.
Another bill that you've introduced recently, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, would allow congressional staffers to unionize. Yeah. Why is that important to you? And what would that look like in a place like Congress?
Well, Jake, you know, you talk about my current race. I mean, of all the members of Congress, the staff came to me and said, you have to introduce this because I'm the union organizer in the Congress. And they trust me to not make this be about me or about the members of Congress, but it's about them. And the reason it's so important to me, Jake, is that it's a fundamental human right to be able to organize and bargain collectively. It's I consider it part of our Constitution. It's freedom of association at work. And yet, for 26 years, the Congress did not give this right to our own staff in our personal offices, in our districts and in D.C., or to the staff of the committees that we work with. 26 years ago, this right was given to the other people who work on the Hill, like the Library of Congress and the Capitol Police and the architect of the Capitol. And many of those workers formed unions, and they all have collective bargaining agreements. But we never afforded that right to our own staff. So I insisted on it. I'm really proud that I have 150 co-sponsors now, maybe more, for this bill. And I'm really grateful that the Zoe Lofgren, the chairwoman of the House Administration Committee, announced that she's gotten the feedback she wanted from the Office of Congressional Workplace Rights, and she's going to hold a hearing on it. And so we're pushing for passing this as just as soon as we can.
I assume this might be another one of those where the filibuster could get in the way if it gets out of the House into the Senate. Is that right?
Oh, no, actually, Jake.
Ah.
Each chamber is free to pass these rules for themselves, for
right.
their own chamber.
Right.
So the House can pass this, and then it would take effect for House staff. And my friend I mentioned earlier, Sherrod Brown, who kind of plays a role with workers and organized labor in the Senate, like I do in the House, he has said he's going to introduce something for Senate staff, and that'll be a question of them passing it over there. You could see a situation where House staff have this fundamental right to form a union and bargain collectively, and Senate staff don't.
Mm-hmm.
But we shall see. That'd be interesting, right?
Yeah, that would be interesting. You know, there are some critics of this idea who have said that Democratic lawmakers, specifically Democratic lawmakers, are already too influenced by the quote, and I'm quoting here, unrepresentative interests and values of staff. And that if they're allowed to unionize, the problem would only get worse. Those are the words used by blogger and podcaster Josh Barrow. I think I'm saying that correctly. I'm curious what your response is to that. I've seen a couple of people make arguments that are similar to that, that staffers are pushing Democratic lawmakers away from, you know, kind of small D Democratic values or issues.
I think it's nonsense, Jake. I mean, if you look at what the workers are talking about, they're talking about they don't want to have racial discrimination at work. They don't want to have super long hours. They don't want to have mistreatment. The issues they're talking about are the kind of issues that workers anywhere talk about. They want to have dignity in the workplace. They want to have a decent life. And people who work in Congress deserve it, just like all workers do. You know, I just don't, I don't think you can say that that workers shouldn't have the freedom to form unions and bargain collectively. It's really not about them having more influence over us and like the policymaking we're doing. It's about them having some influence over their own work lives. And everybody deserves that.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Jake Neer in for Stephen Henderson today. I'm talking with Congressman Andy Levin, a Democrat from Bloomfield Township representing Michigan's 9th District, also running for re-election in Michigan's new 11th Congressional District. I want to go back to the phones on an issue that we've been talking a lot here on the show about. Mark, in Redford Township, you're on Detroit Today. What would you like to say?
Good morning, Jacob.
Hi.
Good morning, Congressman Levin. My comment and question is a tag to the previous topic on redistricting. And in consideration of that, I was wondering if public transit is going to be addressed and funding for it, because this is also a tag onto labor issues as well, because people are disenfranchised if they can't get to labor locations and sustain themselves. And public transit, I think, is so much a part of that.
Yeah, Mark, I really appreciate this comment. Thanks for the call. Congressman Levin, talk about public transit and what Mark is getting at there.
Well, Mark, it's such a good point. I totally agree with you. I would say of Metro Detroit's liabilities, and people were even talking about population growth earlier, we cannot achieve our full potential as a region until and unless we have something we have not had for generations, a robust public transit system. It's for seniors to be able to get to a doctor. It's for students to be able to get to, you know, college or community college. In some cities, students even use it to go to high school. And even in Detroit, they do and should be able to. And of course, it's about people being able to get to work. You're so right about that. And it's to our shame that we don't have a regional transit system. We should have passed it several years ago when we came close. We cannot give up. We have to have accessible transit, affordable transit throughout the region. I'm a big fan of bus rapid transit, BRT. We could have dedicated bus lines with very frequent buses rushing up and down our major corridors, and then links to those on, you know, smaller corridors. It creates great union jobs for the people who work in the transit system, and it helps everybody else get to work and just live their lives. People can go out and party and not worry about driving home. I mean, it really affects all aspects of life, and we'd be a much richer and region if we had a great transit system.
Yeah, and Congressman Levin, I know we have to let you go, but there was a really big development related to this just this week. And we actually, someone who was on the show talking about this earlier this week, Dave Gifford, who's a transit advocate locally, wanted you to hear what you had to say about Auburn Hills opting out of SMART this week, which he says will cut off access to those 1,700 new GM jobs in Orion Township and Great Lakes Crossing. What is in the works to end opt-outs and get transit better funding? He says EVs are great, but they're not very affordable. What was your reaction when you saw that, Congressman Levin?
Yeah, no, I was very disappointed by that. I mean, I think that we need a region-wide system that meets the needs of our communities, and that where you don't have individual communities opting in or out. You cannot have a patchwork system and have a good, you know, a real good transit system. You've got to have it reach everywhere so people can, you know, that's the definition of a market, right? You can't have an open labor market if people can't get to jobs. You can't have a healthcare market if people can't get to health facilities and hospitals. So we really need to encourage everybody to stay in the system we have and to imagine a much more effective and broad system. You know, I don't really think it's about EVs. EVs are going to replace internal combustion engines because we have to save our planet. But I totally agree that we have to have transit accessible. And by the way, Jake, we have to have, this is my Build Green Act with Senator Warren, we've got to electrify all of transit, school buses, city buses, you know, trains, city fleets. Everything needs to go electric so we can eliminate our fossil fuel emissions as quickly as possible. So there's a lot of work to do, and Congress has a big role to play in it. We've got to move much more aggressively on climate change, and we've got to support regions like Detroit in having great transit systems.
Okay, Congressman Andy Levin, Democrat from Bloomfield Township, representing Michigan's 9th District. Really appreciate you joining me here on Detroit Today. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Jake. Great job. I'll talk to you soon.
Coming up on Detroit Today, we'll talk with a Starbucks employee in Ann Arbor who is in the midst of a fight to create a union at his respective location, part of a much larger effort among many places, especially coffee shops here in Southeast Michigan, to unionize. We will hear what he has to say about that effort and whether it represents something bigger here in Michigan or across the country.